Welcome to Unpacking the Box podcast, where we unpack incredible stories and experiences. It's about amplifying those unheard voices, untold stories, and changing narratives left and right. There is so much that can fit into a box. Sometimes you just need to know what's in it or how you're going to feel when unpacking it. Sometimes it can be uncomfortable to unpack, but it's very necessary for the betterment of ourselves and others.
This is Linnea, your host. Today, I'm here with Madison McGee, who is a producer and fellow podcaster. Madison launched a true crime podcast called Ice Cold Case with the hope of solving the murder of her father, which remains unsolved. Welcome to the show, Madison. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I am doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Yes, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. So I thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yes. So I was just telling her that I love her podcast. I'm obsessed with podcasts and I'm always looking for a new podcast to listen to. And so I binge yours and it's really amazing. So for those who don't know, can you give us some of the background story as to why you started Ice Cold Case?
Sure. So when I was 6 years old, my dad passed away. And I was told that he had a heart attack, and that was just sort of the lens in which I processed that happening to me as a kid. And when I was 16, I found out that my dad was actually murdered, and it was a cold case never solved. And so that really changed my, obviously, perspective of my grief and my dad's death, but also kind of the course of my life. I, at the time, was about to graduate high school, was sort of still in my own world, but this was obviously changing things. And so I took a new direction, got really interested in investigative work, journalism, content creation, TV and film production. And so I decided that I would eventually, at some point in my life, investigate this and make something about it to put pressure on the police department to see if they would solve it. And that sort of has eventually manifested into this podcast, which I launched in May, and it kind of took on a life of its own. And now I'm like in the weeds of investigating my dad's murder and kind of making it everyone's business.
Well, I mean, I think that's amazing that you took, well, first of all, I know it must be difficult just for you to have to, you know, talk about your own story, but for you to bring it to the, you know, masses, I think that was amazing. And your storytelling, I feel like I was, you know, you took us there, you know, because it's like some people really have this ability to tell a story and to just make you feel like you're there with them, you know, right there in the midst of everything that's going on. And so you are a really amazing storyteller.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I understand that people who are in my position maybe aren't necessarily geared or wired to do what I'm doing. So I feel very fortunate that I sort of have this like mental stamina to almost tell my own story. I feel like it's very empowering for me. There are tons of podcasts that cover other cases because some people just really aren't capable of talking about their own trauma. And that is, you know, totally normal and fine. And so it feels for me really, I feel really honored that I'm able to sort of take my own story into my own hands and tell it in a way that feels really authentic to myself. It's been a really empowering experience.
Now, how has your background and experiences, you know, growing up in West Virginia, you know, has any of that influenced your approach to investigating true crime cases?
Oh, sure. I grew up in a place in the country and in the world that is incredibly unique. West Virginia is honestly one of the most wonderful places that gets like no credit whatsoever. But it's also very challenging because it feels like you're almost a little bit back in time. The progress is not as quick in places like this. So growing up in the late 90s, early 2000s could almost feel like you're growing up in like the 70s and 80s. And so there were a lot of ways in which I had to move through the world as a kid that, you know, people who grow up in more metropolitan areas don't have to. I was a biracial girl in a very, very white town. And that, you know, I think kind of wired me to move a little bit differently. I feel like I, in the ways that I'm very confident and put together, I'm also very introverted and shy because there were rooms in which I couldn't fully be myself growing up. And so I think that that posed a lot of challenges when you have to be very bold in the work that I'm doing. You have to be very assertive and confident in yourself. And when you're asking questions, say it with this sort of level of almost arrogance that you know what you're talking about, even if you don't. And I struggle with that because of just the environment that I grew up in. It's very, very hard for me to, even now, I'm still sort of in this middle of investigating a piece of the story. I have to make uncomfortable phone calls and do things that some people are just very comfortable doing, and I just feel like I'm really not. And so that poses a lot of challenges. I'm also dealing with an area that demographically is very similar to where I grew up. I now live in LA, where it's very diverse. I love it. And, you know, I'm going back to this town in Ohio that's very white. And so it almost kind of reverts you back to like how I was as a kid or how I thought about things. And it's very weird that the mindset shift I have almost immediately when the plane lands. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm like taken back to these moments in my life. So it's very weird.
And I actually have, I can definitely understand what you're saying too, because I have family that are from some parts of Virginia. And I just remember going down there, like just being younger and just, it's just a different feeling than where, you know, I live now. It's like, I don't know, you know, it's like, it's almost like those movies that you see where like we shouldn't be in certain places. That's how it feels. That's how I felt. So.
And it's tough because like on the surface, it definitely feels that way. West Virginia truly has some of the most lovely people I've ever met in my life. But it is hard when from the outside, it doesn't feel very welcoming. And so you almost don't know how to approach it. And so, yeah, it's definitely a double-edged sword. And there's people who are just brilliant, who are trying to make changes and shifts in the state. I have to call out Crystal. She has an amazing organization, Black by God West Virginia, and they're doing a lot to combat that, but there's a lot of work to be done and it will take a lot of time, but I like applaud the people who are still there doing it. I got out, but I love and appreciate those people.
Yes, me too. Me too. Yes, I love that. So as a producer in the entertainment industry, like how do you balance your professional career with like your dedication to solving your father's murder case? Like how do you balance that?
Oh my gosh, it's actually so tough. I never get asked this. It's funny. It's incredibly difficult. I feel like I have another job. I mean, it's a full time. It takes up so much time. And it is a balance. I had to get really good at multitasking and also time management. And I think that I'm fortunate in the sense that my job is not 9 to 5 whatsoever. So, it's sort of like I'm on for weeks at a time and then I get a little bit of reprieve and I use those times to sort of jump into things and, have to really balance my schedule. But it's such a struggle to know like when to put this down. I mean, it's all consuming investigating your dad's murder and finding things out about your family. And I mean, if you're a true crime fan, just imagine like being literally in the middle of like the most interesting case. It's it's all consuming. I can't think about anything else sometimes. And to have to turn that part of my brain off to like go make a food show is very difficult. But it's almost nice because it's almost in those moments, I don't even realize I actually do need a break. Like I shouldn't be hyper fixating on this 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like this forced built-in break. And I do appreciate that balance.
Yeah, I was wondering that because I know, and I am myself, I do love to watch true crime shows and things like that, which is one of the reasons why I love your podcast. But which is, I mean, it's, you know, it's unfortunate that you even have to, you know, discuss it and start this podcast. But I was wondering how you balance all of that, because I know even as a fan of true crime, I know that I can myself get consumed with just watching it. You know what I mean? It's a lot. So I can only imagine on your side of it, it's a lot. It can be draining.
Yeah, no, it is. And I was a huge fan of true crime before this, and I've almost not really watched anything since because it can be like, I don't know. It's really kind of, it weirds me out now almost. Just knowing, like, I've met some people who are victims of different cases or victims of the crimes that I watch on TV. And it almost is like weird now when you know them and there's this personal connection to like watch their story. And so I don't really watch anymore, which is so weird.
Yeah. Is that because you have a story of your own? Is that why?
Yeah, I definitely think it's like when you're kind of almost in their shoes, it changes the perspective for sure. And also there's so much that you miss. Documentaries are wonderful and beautiful and such a great way to get stories out there, but you're limited to the amount of time that you have. And so sometimes there's so much more to these stories. And a reason why I love that I'm doing my own story is there's a level of like personalization that you just don't get in a doc. I get to talk about who my dad was as a person and what he was like. And I get to talk to his friends and hear stories. Even my mom having some like just funny anecdotes about things that my dad did and the way he was. And you sometimes lose that when you are limited to like 90 minutes in a documentary about a case. You kind of lose that personal touch. And so it's nice when I meet these people, I almost feel like I'm getting more of the story because I'm meeting them in real life. And I think that's why there's this beautiful element of Crime Con, which I didn't know about and thought was weird until I went myself. It's really beautiful to get to meet these people and kind of see them as humans and not entertainment.
Yeah, because I think that is an intricate part of a true crime story. I mean, because the heart of the story is the victim or the victims. And, you know, oftentimes when you see it on TV, you know, it's not, the victims are not being humanized. And that's another part that I do love about your podcast, you know, and I think people forget about that. Like this was a person, you know, this was a father, this was a mother, this, you know, this was a businesswoman, you know, you don't get to hear a lot about that when you're watching those shows and those documentaries and things.
100%. Yeah. You miss that element. And I think that was kind of the point of my show as well. My dad's case wasn't getting solved because there was no pressure, but there was no pressure because it wasn't a mainstream case. And it wasn't a mainstream case because he was just some random guy. And so I had to get people to not only be interested and fascinated by my dad's case, but to care that my dad was murdered. And in order to do that, I had to humanize him. And I think that was an interesting challenge, because how do you get people to care about someone they just don't know? And so I had to like sort of introduce my dad to the world in a unique way. And so that was part of the goal.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's talent also, and ties into like what I was telling you, you're a great storyteller too. So that, you know, that intertwines. And that's amazing that you've been able to do that. So what further steps have you taken so far in your investigation, and what challenges have you encountered along the way?
Oh, so many. So I started by calling the police department and trying to get the case files. I will say every step of the way, there have been challenges. Mm-hmm. But that was a big one because it took me a very, very long time to get access to the police files, a very long time. I had to call multiple times. I had to be very, very assertive. And then getting them, it's like, okay, now I have them. Now what do I do? So I had to learn how to sort of go through them and what certain things mean and how they document things. And that was a challenge. And then it was like, okay, now I want to talk to the police. And that was a challenge. And it's just been sort of hurdle after hurdle. But I think now I'm at a point where it's almost more difficult because I have all of these preconceived notions now. I have assumptions that I've made based on educated guesses, based on reading through all of this and talking to people that I have to prove. And if it's starting to disprove itself, I have to let it go and I have to keep moving forward and find new theories and new ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard, I think, just as human beings, we're stubborn creatures and we like to think that we're right. And so when I start to go down a path where I think, oh no, like this is maybe not it, I have to pivot. It's very hard to convince yourself to pivot when no one's really, I mean, I have no boss. I have no one fact checking me. I have to do that. And so that can be very difficult as well. And a kind of a unique challenge in this where it's so personal that you want to hold on to like any hope that you're on the right path. And when you start to feel that urge that we need to go in a new direction, it's very hard to say, oh, I have to start all over again. Mm-hmm. But you know, it all ends up helping. And I think disproving theories is actually just as helpful as proving a theory because you want to definitively say it wasn't that. And so yeah, there's value in that for sure, but it's hard when you're in it and you're like, oh, I'm so close. Yeah,
I can only imagine. But has the senses like gained the international attention and media coverage, you know, how has that impacted your efforts to bring awareness to your father's case?
It's had two kind of really big effects. The first is the validation. It was very hard in the beginning because I was not sure if truly anyone would listen. My biggest fear was I'm putting in all this work, all this time, I'm doing all of this. If 10 people listen, I could have just investigated this by myself and I didn't need to go through all of this just to make a podcast. Mm-hmm. So the fact that people listened and the fact that it, you know, gained attention of news outlets that I hold at a very high standard kind of gave me that push that you're doing something that's really impactful and you're doing something that like means something to people that you don't know. And I think that validation almost like helps me keep going. Mm-hmm. But it's also this really interesting thing where it's reached corners of the world that I couldn't have reached. So I've gotten tips from people and heard from people that were around or know something that I would have never known they existed. And so that has been really impactful in my own investigation and helped me again, disprove theories or prove certain theories and kind of keep going down certain paths. And that has been incredibly helpful.
Yeah. I really sit in awe of you because I know many of us couldn't do it, you know, what you're doing, you know, and you keep going. You don't give up. And that's amazing. And that's inspiring, you know.
Thank you. It's hard. It is hard. I definitely have days where I am like, I'm quitting everything. Yeah. I'm like, I'm gonna like delete my social media and like never be seen again. But there's just something inside of me, I don't know, that is like literally will not let me. And so I just feel like my kind of phrase of the year I keep saying over and over again in everything is the only way out is through. So I just have to kind of keep going. And the only way I'll get out of this is like getting through it. And so I don't really have an eject button. I just have to get through the journey.
Yeah. Cause I mean, it's a lot, but you know what? You are doing a great job, you know, telling us, you know, introducing us to your father. I mean, because by the time I finished listening, I mean, I felt like I knew him, you know. Yeah. So bravo to you for even being able to do that, because we all know, like, you know, media, it's all about what's trendy, you know, high profile cases and things like that. People are attracted to those things. So to be able to, you know, paint this picture and then bring all these things to the surface, you know, someone that was not known, you know, not high profile, and then draw people in, that is amazing. And I hope you know that.
Thank you so much. That means so much. I definitely have like little reminders like this right now. But it's tough when you kind of hit a lull. I'm in a very deep investigative phase right now of the journey. And, you know, that those are the lonely moments where there isn't a lot of press. There aren't a lot of interviews. No one's knocking at my door to talk to me. And I'm just in it. And I'm investigating every day, calling people, writing down things, making a murder map, doing all of this work, and no one knows about it or kind of sees those parts. And so I forget sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I'm really doing. And so thank you for saying that.
You're welcome. You are so welcome. Now, are you able to share like any insights, any breakthroughs that you've had during the course of your podcast that is bringing you closer to solving the case?
Sure. Episode 9 ends with kind of my theory of what I think happened. And I will say that there have been some massive developments over the last few months that have had me not necessarily question that theory per se, but I think that there is a new added element to it that I was missing before that sort of pieces it together. And so I'm now very deep into figuring out how it all ties together and what that means. And it's really equal parts shocking and groundbreaking and unique for this case, and I think in the true crime space in general. And I am very excited to share it with the world in hopes that there's someone out there, I know that there is, that has the answers that connect these dots. And so I'm piecing together exactly what I think, how it really ties together, making the best educated guess I can in order to put it out there and see there's someone out there that knows something that can help me. And I just have to figure out where they are and who they are.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I hope you do. I definitely pray for closure for you. You know, you are your father's voice. You are your father's advocate, and you are doing an amazing job.
Thank you so much. Yes. My dad died when I was 6, and it's actually so funny. I feel like I know him so much better now. I mean, like, most of my days are spent figuring out like what he was really like. And so I weirdly feel very connected to him in a way that I never really thought I would ever again. And so it's been really special in that way. I feel like I was never like a daddy's girl because I was 6 when my dad died. And now I'm like, oh, like my dad is my favorite parent and he's been dead for 21 years. It's just so weird to kind of feel this like very strange, like almost delusional connection to someone who is not alive. But yeah, I feel like a very special bond with him now.
Yeah. I think that's something too with death. I think, it's like you want to learn more about the person, and part of that is because you miss the person and you just want to learn more, and it kind of makes you feel closer to them too, just to, you know, research them and learn things about them that maybe you didn't know, you know, because I'm finding that myself. My mom died recently and I'm finding, you know, things out about her that I didn't know and learning things about her, and I'm finding that I want to do that, and it does make me feel closer to her. So I resonate with that.
Yeah. And I'm so sorry about your mom.
Thank you.
It's so tough. Like, death is so weird. I'm like, I don't want to go on a rant, but death is so strange because it's the only thing that is certain. Like, we all know that we're going to die. Mm-hmm. And it's so weird how when it happens, Like we feel like shocked and we go through like the stages of grief, but it's like the only thing we know for sure. It's right. So weird. And I like have like very weird thoughts now about death and its inevitability and what it means and who it means something to. And it's just so strange. Like my death, we're all afraid to die. I mean, maybe, or maybe some people want to, but I'm afraid to die for sure. And it's so funny because my death will actually mean nothing to me because I'll be dead. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what am I afraid of? You know, it's like everyone else should be afraid of like the people you love dying, not your own death. But we don't really think about that. We think about ourselves. It's just so, it's so interesting. Mm-hmm. And that like makes us think about things in like the weirdest ways. And yeah, it's weird. Like my dad's death in kind of a comical way meant nothing to him because he's dead. And so I'm doing all of this and everyone's like, wow, your dad would be so proud of you. I'm like, my dad probably doesn't care because he's dead. I'm really doing this like for my own closure. And like, you know, it's just like when you kind of think about like what we're doing things for and who we're doing them for, it kind of, I mean, maybe very philosophical. And I just went on like a very weird rant.
No, it's fine. No, because I'm literally, because I recently lost my mother, I'm in the thick of this. I'm learning about so many things. Like I'm pulling back so many layers because yeah. There's so many layers of death and grief and just everything. And so when you said that, because one of my family members told me, they were like, yeah, we up here crying and stuff and upset. And she probably somewhere partying or she don't care. You know, she's out of this world, you know? So it's kind of like similar, like, my family member, my aunt told me that. She was like, yeah, we in here, we're the ones that crying and stuff like that. And it's true. It's like when you're gone, you can't do anything, you can't feel anything. But it's like we're here all upset and stuff and doing all this work and but they're gone, you know. Yeah. So I get it. I get it. I'm like, I'm in it now. So I get it. It's like every day something new.
I'm like people who like, yeah, they try to like save their money and like they don't want to spend and it's like for what? like what are you gonna do when you're dead and you have $1 million in your bank account? Like you can't do anything. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of shifts like my perspective on things. And also like you don't know when you're going to die. And I think that is so when you really like sit in that, like we say that probably like a few times a month or whatever. But like when you really sit in that and you go, oh my God, like you mm-hmm. don't know. It could be tomorrow. It could be in 100 years, which I hope I don't live that long. But like,
right.
It's so weird how life works and there is no like set of rules. And so it's just like it really shifts your perspective on like how long you wait to do something and timing and your thoughts on death and grief. And I don't know, this has yeah. just fully changed my perspective on so many things in ways that I probably haven't fully processed quite yet, but it's been very interesting.
Yeah, I can relate. I've been, since my mother died, I've been really, it has me thinking about my own mortality and, you know, what happens after death. But also, I'm really hypersensitive and aware of everything as far as like health-wise. Like if I see something like on my skin, I'm like, oh my God, what is that? Like, I'm just really like, everything is, I'm just thinking about my mortality now. And I wasn't before like that. I was just going on with life, like whatever. But it's like, once you, if someone close to you dies, your parent or whatever, you start thinking different things and you have different perspectives about death for sure.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, it's funny to me, like it almost doesn't matter how your parent dies. Like obviously my dad was murdered, but I have friends who lost their dads to car accidents, cancer, what have you. And we all kind of have the same sort of shift in perspective, even mm-hmm. though like we lost our dads like completely differently. There's just something about death in and of itself that feels very universal regardless of the method. And yes. So that's weirdly comforting. I think that was something that was actually really shocking to me. The number of people that felt like they could really relate to me, even though their dad wasn't murdered, but their dad had passed away. And so there was sort of this like group of people that I kind of was like, this is not maybe even triggering for them because I'm talking about my dad and their dad is gone, but like they love it. And they're really interested in sort of what I'm doing because they relate in certain ways and don't in others. But it was just really, really cool to kind of have that community of people who are like, yeah, my dad is passed as well. And we have that in common. And I think about these things the same way. And it's really, really unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found myself relating to so many like strangers who have the same thing, have suffered that type of loss. And I mean, like you said, it's universal. It really is. I mean, I couldn't believe how many people I had to, one of the things that I did to deal with the loss was to join a support group. And I just learned that so many people are going through the same thing. You're so right, the same thing. And it's just, it's crazy. It's really crazy. And it changes you. It literally changes you forever.
100 forever. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So what are your future plans for Ice Cold Case Podcast? And, you know, how do you hope to continue raising awareness?
Yes, I will definitely be putting out more episodes at some point. And I found this sort of curiosity is probably the right word, to help other people with their cases. So I actually have some people in my life that are like within like one degree of separation of me who have either gone missing or been murdered. And so I may start at some point in the future looking into those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. So how do you practice self-care and do like, you know, unwind, relax, and also do fun things, you know, because I know this is a lot of work and I know it's, you know, draining and it's a dark place to travel to all the time, you know. So how do you, you know, relax and have fun?
I have like a wonderful group of friends that help me kind of like break out of this bubble that I live in, and kind of make me feel like a normal person. So I spend a lot of time with them when I'm feeling like things are really heavy. I watch a lot of TV. That's like, people think that's so weird, but I am like obsessed with television. I watch like so much TV. I'm currently rewatching Dance Moms. So I just like will always like, even if it's like I want to take like a 10-minute break, like I'll just turn on the TV. And I'm so like ingrained in television. That's like my self-care for sure. It's like how I like zone out, meditate, whatever. Very strange, but I love it. I have a wonderful cat that is so perfect in that she likes to go on walks and she likes the beach, and so she likes car rides.
Aww.
Yeah, we'll go. She gets me out of the house. Yeah, I mean, I love to travel and I have friends kind of all over the world, which is so wonderful, and I'm able to go visit them. But yeah, I would say my friends definitely are able to, they have more of a pulse on when I'm starting to slip into a funk than even I do. And they can feel it and smell it. And so they'll get me out of the house.
I love that. I love that you have that support system, because you need that. You know, you need that. With the work that you're doing, you need to unwind, you know, just to protect your well-being, you know, through all of this. So that's really great.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's been like, my friends have been really respectful of like knowing when to like talk about this and when to like talk about literally anything else. And so I think that's been really nice, is they kind of know like sometimes I get really burnt out like talking about all of this. And so they kind of know like, let's talk about something else, or like, what episode are you on, or whatever.
Yeah, I love that. I love that for you. Now, first of all, I have to tell you, don't feel weird or strange about TV. I love TV too. Obsessed with TV. That is one of my self-care regimens. I was just doing an episode with Jock, who is a TV show and movie reviewer last episode, well, the episode before the last one. And I love TV. Like, I could talk about TV all day. I watch shows and TV, like movies all the time. So don't feel weird about that. And then also, I have a cat. We have so much in common. We got to keep in touch. I also have a cat. He's a boy, but he doesn't like to do all those things like the going on the beach. He don't like none of that. He's very sweet though. He loves to cuddle and lay with you and stuff like that, and he'll let you hold him, but he's not going out these doors, you know, unless we got to go to the vet or something like that. And even then, we got to like tranquilize him. But he is he's not having none of that. But he's so sweet. He's so sweet.
Love that. Yeah, no, I am obsessed with my cat in like the creepiest ways. She's like my best friend, and like I tell her everything, and like people are like, "You're so weird."
I feel you. It's like I work at home and my kids are gone during the day, so it's just me and the cat. And like he's like my coworker. He is my coworker. I love him.
I love, yeah, same. Yeah.
Yes. Well, Madison, I had so much fun talking to you.
Same. Thank you so much for having me. This was such a pleasure.
You are so welcome. I'm so grateful that you took time out to come and talk to me. I hope that we can keep in touch. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I really can relate to you deeply on, so many levels. So, and keep up the great work that you are doing. And I will definitely pray for you, pray for your mental well-being, your physical, emotionally, well-being through all of this.
Thank you so much. Yes, I would love to stay in touch. And yes, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Tell the people where they can keep up with you, all your handles, your websites, where they can catch Ice Cold Case, all that good stuff.
Yeah, perfect. Ice Cold Case on everything, icecoldcase.com, Ice Cold Case on all social platforms. And I am Madison underscore McGee on everything as well. So.
Yes, make sure you guys connect and make sure you listen to Ice Cold Case. Binge it. As always, I would never say y'all wrong. You are so amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, y'all, we out.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Unpacking the Box podcast, where we unpack it all. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.
Not only is Linnea an amazing podcaster, she is also an independent entrepreneur. Check out her many creative endeavors, such as her women's magazine, Unpacking Her Magazine, which highlights women in business and in all creative areas. In addition, she has an online store, Unpacking Hoodies and Tees, that entails words that will be sure to uplift you. She is a self-published author of two books, and Counting That can be found on Amazon. You can visit and learn more about Linnea's projects by clicking on the link in the show's notes, or visit Linnea's Instagram page at unpacking underscore the underscore box underscore podcast and click on the link in the bio.